53. Driving the enemy before you. Modo held the head high, taunting his enemies with it whenever they turned around. "It's working," Mr. Socrates exclaimed. "The godface is driving them away. Step aside, Modo, and let us get a clear shot at Miss Hackendottier." Modo heard the order, but couldn't obey. He was too caught up in the moment to stop. "I'll get her," he shouted. "I will." He had relished the fear in Miss Hackendottier's eyes. "I hope you go completely insane," he wanted to shout after her. His wounded hand throbbed as though urging him on. He dashed after her and the soldiers. "You cut me, you hurt my friends, murdered my colleagues. Go mad, you evil woman." "Modo, stand aside," Mr. Socrates commanded, but his voice was already distant. Miss Hackendottier was running now, over the fallen pillars. Modo matched her step for step. If his companions were following, he was unaware of them. At one point, Miss Hackendottier turned to face him, a snarl on her lips, but her eyes were immediately drawn to the godface, and her strength waned again. She fled. The remaining passages and stairs were a blur. At one point, Modo jumped a crevasse without even stopping to gauge the distance. The godface was guiding him, pulling him toward the destruction of his enemies. Once outside in the sunlight, he saw Miss Hackendottier running pell-mell down the temple stairs. He stopped cold, gasping for air. It was his own face he was holding up to the world. His own face he was using to drive them away. But a triumphant thought followed. His face was a powerful weapon. A pack of guild soldiers were running up the stairs, rifles raised, but they were shocked to see their leader and fellow soldiers fleeing the cave. Modo removed his mask and walked toward them. "What are you doing?" he asked himself. There were more than 50 of them. They took one good look and bolted, their rifles rattling to the ground. Modo stopped beside the paws of the Sphinx and looked down. With great satisfaction he watched as Miss Hackendottier scurried down the hillside below the temple and through the ruins of the city. A loud blast at his side barely made him shudder. Tharpa was firing the elephant gun. A second blast, and sparks flew near Miss Hackendottier. She didn't pause, was pulling at her hair with her metal hand as she ran past the Prometheus and disappeared into the cover of the forest. In less than a minute, the temple and the city had been abandoned by the guild soldiers. Modo put his mask back on and turned around to find his companion standing behind him in the doorway of the temple, the mouth of the Sphinx. The lion-like statue was looking directly at Modo. Did it approve? He wouldn't have been surprised if it had lifted its stone paws and shaken off 1,000 years of waiting. It felt as though anything could happen on a day like this. Mr. Socrates' lips were moving, but he wasn't making a sound. Then Modo felt a sharp pain in his ears and the sound flooded in. He'd been deafened by the report of the gun. "She'll be dead soon enough, but that was a stunning display," Mr. Socrates exclaimed. His eyes had a glow that disturbed Modo. "To drive the enemy back like that, such a weapon! We'll have to study this godface. There must be a way to duplicate the effect." "Don't you wonder why we weren't driven mad?" Modo asked. "Mad?" Mr. Socrates' eyes were focused on the godface, so Modo tucked it inside the folds of his cloak. "Yes, that's an oddity. But with enough experimentation, we will get to the bottom of that, too." Modo looked from Mr. Socrates to Octavia, Lizzie, and Tharpa. What was the one thing they all had in common? The reason was clear. "Don't you see?" Modo asked.
"See what?"
Octavia asked.
"Modo, are you feeling unwell?"
"I am feeling perfectly fine," he said. "All of you had seen my face before. Our enemies hadn't. That's why you weren't driven insane by the godface. You saw me in that stone head." Mr. Socrates scratched his head. "You do seem to have a penchant for self-aggrandizement, Modo. You cling to these notions of your own importance. Perhaps it's a lingering effect of being abandoned as a child." Modo gritted his teeth. Mr. Socrates raised a hand. "This is not the place or time to argue. Let me hold the head." Modo didn't want to give it up before he had to do so. Someone in the distance began beating a drum. The first sign of a counterattack? A choir began to sing. Modo and the others looked around, perplexed, until Octavia said, "Look, down there." Crossing the ruins and climbing the long stairway was a group of half-naked people, moving in single file. As they approached the steps to the temple, Modo recognized them as the Rain People, 15 warriors followed by Nulu and her grandfather. One warrior was pounding on a hand drum. The remaining warriors carried spears and shields painted with the godface image. They stopped singing and continued up the steps toward Modo. "They're friends," Modo said to his companions. "Please, no guns." Nulu pointed at him with a little finger and said, "Modo." Then she said several more words. "Nulu," he replied. Seeing her calmed him, and he was moved by the way the tribesmen gazed at his face with such reverence. She tugged on his cloak until he got down on one knee in front of her. Then she pushed back his mask and touched his face. Her fingers were warm.
"Walu, Ngul Kurijin, Yulu," she whispered as she stroked his cheek.
He didn't know what any of the words meant, but listened intently. She repeated them softly several times. Then, gently, she took the godface from him, so heavy in her little arms that she nearly dropped it. She bowed slightly and handed the godface to her grandfather. Then the warriors and her grandfather bowed and followed her down the steps toward the rainforest.
But,
Mr. Socrates pointed at the tribe.
"They can't take the godface."
He took a few steps after them, then turned to Modo.
"Command them to return it. Now."
"I can't, Mr. Socrates. I don't speak their language. Besides, it belongs to them more than it does to us."
"Belongs to them? You saw the symbols on their shields? We'd alter their lives if we took it. That godface could end wars."
"Or start new ones," Lizzie said.
Her face was solemn.
"What does that mean?"
Mr. Socrates asked. Lizzie shrugged.
"Weapons are designed to be used."
"Of course they are,"
Mr. Socrates replied. Modo saw that the Rain People had gone back into the forest.
"It's too late, either way," he said. "We can't get it back now."
Mr. Socrates stared after them, looking flabbergasted, his face contorted by a cold rage. Modo put his mask back on.
"Mr. Socrates," he began.
"Don't speak of this, Modo." Mr. Socrates waved his hand.
"Lizzie, get us out of here on that airship. Who knows whether or not those natives will be back in force, or Miss Hackendottier, for that matter."
They hurried down to the Prometheus and boarded. In no time, Lizzie fired up the boiler, and soon they were airborne, the roaring engine announcing their departure. As the Prometheus rose slowly above the ruins, Modo looked out over the edge of the car, searching for a sign of the Rain People in the forest. Nothing. He could clearly see the Sphinx and the tomb entrance they had escaped from. The temple, where a replica of him, a part of him, had been waiting for over 2,000 years. The godface hadn't driven him mad, but trying to understand how it had come to exist just might. Octavia stood beside him and put her hand on his shoulder. He wanted to lean into her, but was afraid to. Instead, he leaned even farther over the edge of the car.
"What do you see down there?"
Octavia asked.
"My new beginning," Modo answered.